everybody. Tonight we're going to have one more class on Java to complete our first whirlwind tour of Java. And to just to get you started, tonight we'll go over some Java examples. And I thought, since you're working on windowing examples for your homework, instead of doing any new material, that I would go over some more of the window examples that you've, the kind of thing you've been working on. Then next week, next Wednesday, 2 days from now, you'll be starting with JavaScript, so which is an easier language to learn, much easier. So I'm showing you all these examples off the Java resources page, and you have a link to this page from the class webpage. So I'm going to start with some abstract windowing toolkit examples, and I want to show some examples of a couple of the kind of components that we didn't have time to go over in the class notes very much, to any great extent. So the first one, actually I'm going to show this one that's called RGB to HSB converter, primarily to show the use of scroll bars. Excuse me, I can't talk, even with the microphone, I can't talk over quite so much noise in the room. So this example is an applet that has two sets of scroll bars, and the three scroll bars in the middle here represent red, green, blue components of color, so that you can move these slider bars. For example, turning on red, or if you turn on red and green, whoops, I'm having trouble grabbing this, you get yellow, or red and blue, you get magenta, and you can move them around. And the other thing that's happening that while I do that is that over here on the other set of slider bars, there's another set representing hue, saturation, and brightness, which is another way to represent color as mixtures of light. So both of these are examples of color systems that are used to represent pixel colors that you would use on a screen. So let's look at the code for this. As you look, well, first let's just look at the applet a little bit. You might think about how this is set up. Obviously, there are three parts to this applet panel. And the one on the left is probably just a canvas that changes color. And the two on the right are panels that have the three scroll bars and their labels in them. So here's the code. I hope that's a big enough font to be seen. So this is an applet, and the declarations of the panels are given right up here at the top, and this is the canvas. It's called Swatch. It's going to be on the left. The two panels on the right, which have scroll bars, are both going to be represented by this class called Color Controls, which is going to be defined later in the applet. So there are two declarations of variables of type Color Controls, RGB Controls, and HSB Controls. Now, in the init function, let's see. I think I'm not going to explain every line of this code. The important stuff is here where you create, the layout is a grid layout, 1x3, as we might expect from looking at the applet. We create a canvas and set its background to be the initial color. The other two panels are created by calling the constructor from the class Color Controls that's going to be defined at the bottom. And the constructor for Color Controls has a large number of arguments. And notice that the first argument is a reference to the applet that's creating the object of this class. And the other three are the labels of the scroll bars, and the final three are values, which we'll talk more about later when we get down to the color controls. Then finally, you just add those three things, and it goes. They go into the grid. So that's the init function. Then comes this insets function, which just serves to put some space around everything we talked about before. And then down at the bottom, we have this color controls class. I'm sorry, we don't. This is another method in the initial applet. I was getting ahead of my story here. And actually, this method is called update, and it takes as a value an object of type color controls. And what update is going to do is, when people move the sliders for RGB, it's going to update the HSV, the hue, saturation, and brightness slider, and vice versa. So let's go down and look at the color controls class. So color controls is a subclass of panel, and it has three scroll bars, which are in this instance called RGB, and it has a class variable that's going to record the reference to whoever called this. And it's the outer applet, which is called colors. Here is the constructor for this class. The first argument is the reference to the applet. Then there are these strings called L1, L2, and L3, which are going to be the labels. And then the values, which are going to be put into the scroll bars. So we record the reference. We set a grid layout for the panel. Notice that it's a 3x2. It's vertically 3 high, and it's 2 wide because on the left-hand side are the labels, and on the right-hand side are the actual scroll bars. So we create the scroll bars, and here we have sort of the important part about scroll bars, which is the constructor. So it has a lot of arguments. We're creating these three scroll bars, and notice that the first argument is, in this case, a constant or a variable called scrollbar.horizontal, and as you might imagine, there's another one called scrollbar.vertical, which controls the orientation of the scroll bar. Our scroll bars were horizontal. You can also make them vertical. The next thing that goes there is the actual value that the scroll bar is to take on. A scroll bar represents a range of values. And the last arguments are actually the range. In our case, we're going to have them range from 0 to 255. So that's a natural way to have RGB range over, and we're going to scale the hue, saturation, and brightness, so it also ranges over 0 to 255. The value, then, that the scroll bar represents should be in that range, and that's where the little slider in the middle should be, is in a position that represents that value. Now, this other argument here, which is here listed as 10, is called the visible part, and that's how wide the little slider is in the middle. That's how many values it represents. So in the range from 0 to 255, our little slider is wide enough to represent 10 values. Now, these arguments to scroll bar are not real obvious. So what would you do if you were looking at this example and you found it someplace and you wanted to know what was going on with scroll bars? Well, you would go back to the Sun API, and we'll go look at that some more this evening near the end, which shows all the different classes, including scroll bar, and we'll show the constructors to the classes, and we'll give some more hints about what those arguments might be. So now that we've created the three scroll bars, we add the labels and the scroll bars to the panel. So we add labels, the label L1, and we make it aligned to the right. You're allowed to give that as an argument to labels. Then we add the first scroll bar, and so on. And then down at the bottom, finally, we have what to do if there's an event generated by the scroll bar, and you get an event from the scroll bar whenever anybody moves the slider or moves one of the little arrows at the end that also moves the value of the slider. And what we do in the case of the slider being moved is we call update in the parent applet. So let's go back up to update. I lost it. Here we go. And it takes as an argument which panel, as an argument, as a formal parameter called IN, which of the two scroll bar panels caused the event. And in the case that the RGB panel caused the event, you get the values of red, green. There are methods that you can use to get the values of the three scroll bars, and you convert them to HSB and set the values of HSB correspondingly. Then, for the other way around, you can, if the event was caused by the HSB scroll bars, did I get this backwards? No, I think this is right. You get their values and you convert them to RGB. Yes. So this is what it looks like. And again, you know, if you move hue, saturation, and brightness, you can see some of the RGB sliders moving. If you move an RGB slider, you can see hue, saturation, and brightness moving. So this applet demonstrates using scroll bars. You can also, there's a useful function of the component class that is called reshape, and you should be able to use it on any component so that if you don't like the default size, you can make it a different size. So for example, if you thought this was a kind of not fine enough representation of 0 to 255, you could reshape this to be, you know, longer or something so that you could represent the values more finely. Another thing that people often do with scroll bars is instead of just putting the label out here of what kind of thing it is, that you put labels over the scroll bar representing the different values. So you'd put 0 at one end and 255 at the other end. Another thing that you can control that I didn't show was that when you push on these arrows, you can control how much. We didn't do that in this example at all, but you can give values so that if you click on the arrows, the scroll bar moves by that amount of value. Okay, are there any questions about that example? Oh, there we go. Now it's moved. You can also get an event from the scroll bar if somebody moves the mouse into the scroll bar area. But in this case, we chose not to handle that event. Actually, in the API, I think one of the trickier things sometimes is tracking down what is the set of events that you can get from a particular thing. I mean, it's pretty clear about what are the class variables and what are the class methods, but sometimes you have to read a bit, both in the class and in the event handler, about what are the events you can get. The events will be passed up the container hierarchy from the innermost to the entire panel as they're placed within each other. I mean, you have a panel, and you might break it up into different areas and so on. And so this is actually handling the event as Aquinas, the panel. But we could have put the event handler up at the main panel, and events from both of the, from all six of the scroll bars would have been passed up there. And then we would have to distinguish more about which scroll bars caused which event. So you should handle them at the level that's most convenient for you to access the variables and the methods that you need to affect the change that you want to do. But notice that in this case, it's quite often the case that you really do want to handle the event down at the finer level. This is in the control panel, but you want to affect a change in another part, something that's not directly, doesn't have a variable or a method that's directly in your class. And that's why we passed that reference to the outermost applet, so we could use it to access methods in that class. Okay. Now, I think that we did pretty much in class simple things like labels and buttons. We did checkboxes. I'll show you some more checkboxes in a minute. We didn't do as much about pop-up frames, so I have here a really simple example that shows how to do an individual frame. And in this example, this is an applet, and it has a main area, which is just colored. And down here, there's a little tiny button. And the button is called Get Control Frame, and I don't know if you can read that, because that type font, of course, is controlled by the applet, and it wasn't affected when I changed the type font of the browser. So if you click this button, what you get is another frame that pops up. And I can put a menu on this frame, but I was trying to make a really simple code, so I didn't do that. I just filled the panel that's the interior of this frame with three more buttons. And two of them are control buttons. One of them says change to blue. And if you click it, the main panel changes to blue. And you change to cyan. And there's no change to magenta. I don't know why. And finally, what you always have to have in a pop-up frame is either a quit button, like I have here, or if you put up a menu, you have to have an item which is quit. You can't actually quit these frames from that button, which you might think that X Windows would allow you to quit that. It doesn't. So you have to program in the quit. And so I put it in here as a button on the interior part. When I click it, it goes away. So I'll show you how that works. So again, this is an applet, and I have a canvas and a button at the outermost level. So my init is pretty simple. I set the layout to a border layout, and I'm sorry, I just got confused by the variable names there for a minute. Okay, so the button was created up in the top part here. The button is called Get Frame, and here's the constructor for the new button, and the button was labeled Get Control Frame. So down here in the init, after I set the border layout, I call the constructor that's going to make that constructs the pop-up frame, but it's not going anywhere yet. I'm just constructing it. This actually adds to self the button, which is called Get Frame. So actually, I was finding, reading this, that I was confused between the names My Frame and the name, which is going to be the pop-up frame, and Get Frame, which is the name of the button. So I should change that to have better names. So anyway, I added the button to the self component of the border layout. Then I set the background color to be the initial color, and the canvas, which is the main part, is called Just Color up here. So Just Color dot set background sets the background color of that, and then I add it to the center. Okay, so this puts the button in the bottom, and this puts the canvas called Just Color in the center. Now there are some other methods here. And one of them is to change color. It's called change color, but this method, again, is going to be changing the background color of the canvas, but it's going to be called by the control buttons in the pop-up frame. It's not actually called within the applet. Then we have an event handler down here, the action method. And this is what handles the button called Get Frame that's in the initial frame. And when you click on it, then what you do is make the pop-up frame occur. And that's simple. I already created that frame. It was called My Frame. And I just called the show method on that. So My Frame.show, and the pop-up window occurs. So down here, let's look at the class called New Frame. And here is where I have the definition of the three buttons which are in that frame. One's called Quit, one's called Change to Blue, one's called Change to Cyan. So those three buttons are declared there as instance variables. Here is the constructor method. It's called New Frame. And again, it has a reference to the applet that calls it, which it records in this instance variable called outer parent, then, which is important so that other methods within this class can refer to that. Then I set the title bar of the frame. That's one of the methods that's available. And when you're creating a new frame, then you can make it whatever size you want. When you've been doing applets, you haven't worried too much about making your panel a particular size because the applet viewer has already given you a size to work with. And you can find out what size that is and work with that. But here, the window is going to pop up, and you can make it however big you want. You can make it tiny. You can make it giant. And I chose to make it 300 by 300 pixels, and that's what this resize method is for. So actually, when you're doing Java applications, which are standalone Java programs, it's more like this, because when you write a standalone Java program, you have to create the frame and do the resize and make it the size you want it. Applet programming is different because the browser has already set up the size of the applet for you. So anyway, I set a layout 3x1, and I add the three buttons, and that's all I do in the constructor. Then there are just, I have an action method for the three buttons, and if you click the button called blue button, then I call change color in the applet so that the background of the main applet changes. Similarly with cyan. And finally, the last button is the one that was called quit, and it's the close window, and it's real simple. There's a method called hide. So you create the frame, and whenever you want it to show, to appear, you call show. There's a method called show. And when you want it to quit, you call hide, and it goes away. Yes. Yes, you could show it again. It would not kill the window until you did a dispose. You could do a dispose on that frame, and then it would be completely gone. The resources would be gone, and if you wanted it back, you would have to call the constructor again. So essentially, the constructor is going to allocate the memory that keeps track of what was in the frame, and dispose gets rid of it. And that's true for almost all classes and components. You get rid of them with dispose. So the question is, if you have more than one class in your file and you run the compiler, it's going to convert it to something.class. And the answer is that it will convert it to any number of things.class, however many classes there are in your file. So when I compile this file, there's only one file called, I forget what it's called. It's called popupframe.java. But when I compile it, I get a file called popupframe.class and a file called newframe.class. Now, in the HTML, all I have to reference is the main applet. So I put the applet tag with popupframe.class, and the browser knows to download, along with the information in the compiled into popupframe.class, is the information about what other classes are required. So those are all downloaded at the time. That's right. You don't have to mention the second class. And in fact, it doesn't have to be in the same file. It can be in that package or any other file that can be referenced by the path name that you give to the Java compiler at the time of compilation. Okay? So we'll just see it again. There it pops up. There's the control. Then you quit and hides it. I guess I'll show you this example. It has rather simple components, but it's just a more complex example than we've seen so far. Unfortunately, it's also got a very small type font, so maybe this isn't such a great idea. We also have a class called ECS400, and that's why this is XTC400 pizza, but anyway. What this class illustrates are two things. Actually three things of interest. And one is that there's use of the checkboxes here. So there are different sizes. You can pick like small, medium, and large. And then down here there are different toppings. You can pick like pepperoni and peppers. Then when you click this button called place order, what happens is it calculates how much that pizza order would cost. And then finally, if you really want the pizza, you say confirm order. Unfortunately, it doesn't deliver pizza. It just says, thank you for your order. Your account has been debited. So it doesn't deliver pizza. It just charges you money, which is a great way to do commerce on the web. But anyway, pizza's bad for you. That's right. It's sparing you all these cholesterol problems. So notice that the checkboxes up here have a checkbox group because only one of them is allowed to be checked at a time, whereas the checkboxes down here, any number of them can be checked. There's not a particular checkbox group. So one of the things this example illustrates is the use of the checkboxes, both as in a group and not in a group. And the other thing it illustrates, I think, is sort of making up a layout which has a lot of different components here. There's a text field where you can type in your address. Finally, it illustrates this whole business about doing the arithmetic about how much the pizza costs is not too hard, but getting all these dollars to line up is actually kind of tricky. And there's a lot of stuff down here with strings and string buffer classes to make all this be formatted properly. So let's just only take a quick look at this code. I thought I put a link to the code on here, and I don't see it. Can I type in a URL? Do I scroll here? Oh, it would help if I used the right keyboard. When I type on the Macintosh, nothing appears on the SGA. As you might suspect, since this is a more complex example, there's quite a bit of code, and that's why I don't think I can go through all the details. But you might like to see, this is also an example of kind of a fine-grained approach to breaking up the area, so that actually there is a class made. I'll scroll down and show you the classes. This is the main applet. Has an init function, action for the button, something for handling the order, handling the confirm button. And then we get down here, and there's a separate class defined for every little piece of the layout. So there's a class called top, which all it did was print the first flashy panel that had XTC 400 pieces on a blue background. Then there was a class called loc, which did the next part, which had the address of the supposed pizza shop. Now here's a class called pizza small, medium, and large, which is going to be the part with the checkboxes. So here's where you can check out checkboxes with a checkbox group. In the constructor for this class, you create a checkbox group. Every checkbox that you add has that checkbox group called size boxes as one of the arguments. And the last argument is whether it's initially checked or not. And, of course, we make the default to be to check the large pizzas to encourage people to spend as much money as possible. Then there's a method for this class that is going to find out which of those is checked. And what it does, you can see that it uses the method getCurrent with the checkbox group. So sizeBoxes.getCurrent returns the reference, the object of the checkbox, which is currently selected. So then we can use, so since that's a checkbox, we can say dot and then use getLabel, which is a method which applies to checkboxes, to find out what the label is of the checkbox which is currently selected. So that's just kind of piled up there. And then we can test that to see whether that label was small, medium, or large and return the appropriate value. Whoops. Didn't mean to make that jump. Here is the next one, and it just has regular checkboxes. It doesn't have a particular checkbox group, and it just has the labels of the checkboxes. There are two methods. One of them is a method called countTops, which returns the number of toppings which are selected. So for each checkbox, you can call a method called getState, which will return to you true or false depending on whether that checkbox is selected or not. And then we can write a loop that counts the number of those. And then finally, we have a method called topSelection that returns a bit vector that is true or has a bit turned on in the locations in which the toppings are checked. And again, we can use getState for that. This class is the one that has the name followed by the email address. So notice that it's just a text field that was added to the thing. And the only method that's shown here to deal with text fields is getText. So there's a method called getText in this class, which uses the method called getText on the text field to find out what the person typed in. And then down at the bottom here is this whole thing that was the green area that had all those labels for the different parts of the bill and empty strings with dollar signs on them. And I'm not going to go through all that detail, but there's a lot of stuff there. And if you're interested in the string and string buffer classes, there's some uses here of both of those. This goes on for a long time. I guess most of the other stuff here is fairly simple. Down here there's a bunch of classes which are just show you how to put up for each type of thing. So that particular component. So here is a panel only has one component, one text area. So these are really simple code. And all it does is add a string to the text area and show the event. So there's a whole set of those for you to check as well. Okay. Yeah. Oh, really? Which one is that? Open window? Close window. Did that work on your browser? You can change the color of this window. Oh, reverse text? Oh, set text. Enter text. Using the right keyboard. When I hit return, then if they should have done something. I mean, if they were programming this nicely, right? I don't see that it had. You can't read that because of this blue background. Okay, I haven't looked at this example either, but it doesn't look very good, does it? Well, I never tried the set text before. I tried the colors on this example, and it seemed to work. But once you do set text, it seems to have messed this up. Where's this example from? Oh, well, we won't point any fingers. I don't know where it's from myself. What? Well, closed window worked for a on this pop-up window until I did set text, and now it doesn't work anymore, and these things never work. So this is a general property of the pop-up frame, is that the native windowing close mechanism doesn't work. But I don't know why they have this so that this close mechanism doesn't work anymore. So this seems to be a screwed-up applet, which is unfortunately not too hard to do. Actually, it's more common that your applet doesn't necessarily behave quite the same on different browsers. So it's always helpful when you put on your homework to make a note of what browser you observed it correctly running on. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know what's wrong with this applet. Did you want to look at the code or? Nah. We better check that one out. See, these are never going to go away. There. I'll hide the evidence. That's called sweeping the evidence off the screen or something like that. Okay, so that we've done this with that. And this one called Three Button was the one that I did in the original lecture. So you've seen that one before. Okay, so I want to show you some other parts of this. So we mentioned looking things up in the Java API, and we talked about that briefly before. I want to show you some more things, because the Java API is formatted a little differently than I was used to the time before. But if you scroll across, so what's on this first page is the different packages. And if you click on those, you can go down through the hierarchy finding things. But I find it more useful to use two things up at the top here, if I can show you. And one of them is the class hierarchy. And if you click on that, you have alphabetized the packages that are two levels down into the hierarchy. So, for example, if you wanted to look up scroll bars, you would look here. It's a subclass of component, so you would look down here till you found component, and under component, you find all the different ones. Oh, I didn't scroll quite far enough. Including scroll bars. And in the API, then, it has the instance variables, horizontal and vertical. And it has the constructors. Notice that here is the constructor that we use. Had an orientation value, the visible part, the minimum and maximum. There's a lot of other methods here. But they've added a part, a little more description of how all this works so that you can get a better feeling. So some of this didn't used to be in there, so they're obviously adding more of this as they go along. So here's a little description of what the visible means and so on. So some of your questions can be answered by looking things up in the API. And as you go further down, you get more detailed stuff about the different methods. Now, sometimes it happens that you're... Oh, while we're here in this part of the API, though, let's go down and look at threads. Because we had this question about the sleep method for threads. And I said in class that I thought you must be able to put the name of a particular instance of the thread, .sleep. But you can't. What you're supposed to say is thread.sleep. And if you go and look here, which I couldn't understand because I thought you should be able to put different threads to sleep, but if you look, it says that sleep causes the currently executing thread to sleep, so that you can only put one thread to sleep at a time. So there's never a question about which thread is going to sleep. I still think it's more consistent object-oriented syntax if you would say name of the thread dot sleep instead of name of the class dot sleep, but that's the way it works. And if you want to put to sleep, or you want to interrupt the execution of any number of threads, there's another method called suspend. Should be down here, that you can use to put different, to stop the execution of different threads. Okay, the other thing that's handy is this thing called index. And if you're reading an example and you come across a method you've never heard of before, you can look it up. So suppose, for example, that we were reading a method that I'm going to show you in a minute, and we found a reference to something called prepare image. And we had no idea what class it was in. Oh, this is making me seasick. Here we go. Prepare image. So this just has all the methods and all the variables in it, and you alphabetized, and you can look them up. So prepare image is a method in class component, and you call it with an image. There's some integer, and with an image observer. And if you look in the component class and find prepare image, if you call prepare image on an image, the this method checks with the thread that's running the image observer and finds out if the image has been fully downloaded or not. So it returns true if the image has already been fully downloaded and false otherwise. So this is actually a useful image, useful method. I know some of you had questions when you were doing animations about some you were using images and they wouldn't download before your animation would run. So the thing to do is to check. This is one way to check. There's also another class called, not only is there Image Observer, but there's Media Tracker that you can check out, and there are methods. There's a little tutorial in Media Tracker about how to check on different images to see which ones are downloaded. So that's a new example that I put in under graphics. So you might not have seen that. It's called Night Tour, and it's the standard. It takes a standard Night Tour, and it just runs a little animation that runs this night around the chessboard. And unfortunately, our network here is running too fast tonight, so you couldn't see all the applet messages while it was downloading the image. Sometimes the image down here at least takes a while to download, and it really messes up if you don't wait for it to download. So in this code, further down, it first does a get image, which starts getting down. Oh, by the image is that little knight. There's an image that's the little knight that moves around the board. It starts getting it down with get image. And down here, it calls prepare image to find out if it's already downloaded. And if it's not, it does this pause. And it has, when you do show status, it will give messages in the bottom bar of the browser window so that you can see what is going on. Only unfortunately, it happened too fast for us so that we didn't see it say loading image from the server and then finally say ready. Okay, that's what I wanted to show you out of that example. And now, under tutorials and your Java resources, there are some little tutorials on various topics that were written locally, and we went over some of this stuff in class, but we also downloaded for you the Java tutorial, the latest version from Sun. And so it has some interesting examples as well, so you might want to go through here. They've now made this into a book, I understand, and they have it organized by different classes of applications. So if you're interested in abstract windowing toolkit stuff, I think it's under here. Using components, the GUI building blocks, I mean, it would start here and it would tell you about the different components. So those are the main resources that we have. I see I've ended early. Do you have it? Okay. So that was all I wanted to show tonight. So.